machines. Most kidney patients are hospitalized in the territory's biggest medical center, the Shifa Hospital. The hospital, just like other health facilities in Gaza, has been struggling with severe shortage of basic supplies for several years under the Israeli blockade. This has hit the patients with chronic diseases, including renal failure, the hardest, and children are no exception.
Kidney failure patients in Gaza Strip are amounting to 1,100. These patients, usually every one of them will make dialysis 3 times per week in different hospitals of Gaza Strip. Among those 1,100, we have 38 children. So without having those dialysis every week 3 times, they will certainly succumb to their life and they will die.
The lives of kidney failure patients depend on dialysis machines, but they usually malfunction due to overuse and lack of spare parts for repairs.
I need kidney dialysis 3 times a week, and I suffer from various illnesses. Dozens of medicines are nowhere to be found in Gaza's hospitals. The situation is very dangerous, and not having the treatment is a death sentence to kidney patients.
Death and suffering for Palestinians have always been what has come out of Israel's policy of keeping almost every necessity under scarcity in the Gaza Strip. And the health system has been no exception.
Today, this crisis is very acute now. I think this is the top urgent crisis we're facing in Gaza Strip today. And as you know, every now and then, the Israelis are still waving to attack Gaza once again. So the situation is very hard, complicated. And humanitarian issues, including health sector, should be avoided from all those punishment to the Palestinian people, because the patients will pay their lives.
What makes things worse for Palestinians is the fact that the international community remain apathetic to their plight.
Gazans have been facing difficulties in receiving medical care since 2007. The Ministry of Health blames the Israeli blockade for the endless suffering, especially among chronically ill patients. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
From breaking world records to bringing home gold medals for the first time.
Scream of elation for the Iranian nation. Nahid Kiani, world champion.
Iranian female athletes have been making their mark in the world, from team sports such as futsal and hockey to fencing and canoeing. For these young ladies, sky is the limit.
Over the past 2 years, the administration has worked hard to promote women's sports. That is why our sportswomen have been able to win over 1,300 medals in international tournaments, outnumbering the number of medals earned by male athletes.
Today, the number of female athletes in Iran is greater than that of males in the top 13 sports disciplines, including martial arts, particularly taekwondo, and also track and field, with a number of trailblazers making it possible for a new generation of Muslim girls to join in.
The presence of Iranian female athletes is not just significant in terms of their capabilities. More important than that is their presence on an international level promoting Islamic values. These young ladies are trailblazers that lead the way for sportswomen from other Muslim countries to take part in international events.
Words that were echoed by Iran's president in a meeting with athletes that will soon be off to Hangzhou, China, to take part in the 19th Asian Games.
I always emphasize that we should pay special attention to sports for all members of our society, particularly women. These young ladies are cultural ambassadors that demonstrate to the whole world that our values don't contradict a strong presence in sports events.
Over the past 2 years only, Iranian female athletes have been able to win more than 1,380 colorful medals in different fields, collecting bronze, silver, and gold medals, and making Iranians proud.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Addressing the UN General Assembly, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says the presence of foreign forces in West Asia creates insecurity. The six Palestinians are killed in the latest Israeli attacks in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. And the United States' main auto workers union says more plants will go on strike if talks with automakers over pay hikes fail. The top story for this half hour. Iran's president has delivered his speech at the 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly. Ebrahim Raisi says a new world order is taking shape across the globe, which will remain irreversible.
We are at a determining juncture, a historic juncture. Today, the world is moving towards an emerging world, and this trend, this path, is not reversible. The aging liberal order, which serves the interests of domineering powers, which used to serve their interests, it does not exist anymore. And in one word, the project to Americanize the world has failed.
Raisi said the world will not accept the Western hegemony any longer, the Iranian president said. Some Western powers have the Cold War mentality. Fan the flames of conflict and seek to undermine the well-being of other nations. He said Iran has played a key role in foiling the plots of hegemonic powers. Raisi further said the presence of foreign forces in West Asia creates insecurity. He described the Israeli regime as a main source of instability and insecurity in the region. The president also hailed anti-terror efforts of late Iranian Commander General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike in Iraq in January 2020.
The security today for some countries in our region, they owe their security to the struggles by martyr Soleimani. And if it hadn't been for the bravery of Lieutenant General Soleimani, he was a hero of fighting terrorism. If it hadn't been for his struggles, many regions would have burned in the fire set by the Daesh terrorist group.
Raisi said Iran will use all the capacities at its disposal to bring to justice those who were involved in General Soleimani's assassination. He also blamed Western countries for using terrorism as a tool to advance their foreign policy goals. Rice, he said, some European countries have become a safe haven for anti-Tehran terror groups such as the MKO, which has killed more than 17,000 Iranians. He also condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran and Islamophobia in Europe. Further in his remarks, the Iranian president stressed that Iran will not give up its right to use peaceful nuclear technology.
Nuclear weapons have no place in Iran's defense doctrine. Official reports by relevant international authorities as well as Western intelligence agencies, they have time and again actually confirmed this claim, the authenticity of this claim. Iran, over the past two decades, has never ever given up its right to use and will never give up its right to use nuclear technology for peaceful purposes.
The Iranian president played down the impact of U.S. sanctions on the country's progress, hinting the failure of the maximum pressure campaign launched by the former U.S. administration against Tehran. Raisi also warned Europe would be a loser if it chooses the path of confrontation in dealing with the Islamic Republic over its nuclear case. Human rights activist Mohsen Avi believes Western countries, including the U.S., have seen substantial erosion in their clout in the world.
Well, I think it is quite apparent today, and maybe 10 years back, it wasn't as apparent as it is today, that we see a decline in the domination that Western powers, specifically the U.S., had on the region of West Asia and throughout the world. We see African countries, an African Union forming, in which they are clearly against Western imperialism. We see a decline, a huge shift in Western dominance in the region of West Asia as well, where we now see the Americans having almost no power in Iraq. They have no domination over Iran, which they did before the revolution in 1979. We see them absolutely weak in Syria. We see that Israel is weak as has never been before. We see all these internal conflicts within Israel. And we see that the war in Yemen has now also, it's over. We see Saudi Arabia with its recent ties with Iran also slowly and gradually moving away from its Western allies. So yeah, I think this is the times that we are living in are absolutely unprecedented. And this is the time when the tactics of the Cold War won't work anymore.
The prisoner swap deal between the U.S. and Iran has taken place. Five prisoners from each country has been freed. That's the only common denominator when it comes to this release. While Iran has found it to be its duty to defend the rights of its citizens on humanitarian grounds, the U.S. has blasted Iran as being a bad actor.
An emotional reunion. Two of the five Iranians illegally detained by the U.S. have returned to the Islamic Republic, their homeland, reunited with their family. The crime? Conducting business, which the U.S. claimed had violated U.S. sanctions. Meanwhile, the five prisoners held in Iranian jails have also been freed. Their crime, far more serious than just conducting business. They were charged with spying. The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi and his team conducted very difficult behind-the-scenes talks, an arduous task since Iran and the U.S. cannot negotiate directly. Thanks to mediators in Qatar and in Oman, the release has taken place. This was deemed as a great accomplishment for the Raisi administration on humanitarian grounds. The Iranian president has promised that it would safeguard Iranians' rights and fight for Iran's rights at any cost. incredible double standards are at play in the way Western media covered this story. It seems like the media forgot that the U.S. had imprisoned Iranians, illegally at that, in their prisons, emotionally covering the released prisoners from Iran while condemning Iran and its officials. Not even scant coverage of the prisoners of the bereaved families on the Iranian side. One of the prisoners held by Iran on spying charges, Siamak Namazi, was a businessman held since 2015. He thanked the U.S. President Joe Biden for ultimately putting the lives of American citizens above politics, as if the Iranian president had not done that. But the politics Namazi is talking about is out of U.S.'s own doing. The sanctions-obsessed U.S. uses its sanctions policy to twist the arm of nations into following its foreign policy line. Even on the day of the prisoner release, U.S. sanctioned the former president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He was Iran's president 10 years ago. Additionally, the U.S. sanctioned Iran's intelligence ministry, and just days before that, it had sanctioned 29 individuals and entities in connection with what it claimed was violent suppression of nationwide protest. In the case of Siamak Namazi, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison for espionage and cooperation with the U.S. government and foreign intelligence networks. His company, Atiyeh Bahar Consulting in Tehran, was associated covertly acting with the U.S. government's companies anti-Iranian in nature, like the VOA TV channel, the U.S. government's Institute for National Strategic Studies, INSS, at the Pentagon's National Defense University, and the Office of Iranian Affairs at the U.S. State Department.
There's a stark contrast to how Iran views diplomacy as opposed to the U.S., putting aside a vast mistrust between the two. Iran respects another country's sovereignty, while the U.S. jails Iranians because of alleged circumvention of illegal U.S. sanctions. Iran justifiably jails people suspected of spying and collaborating with foreign governments like the U.S.
The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi is in New York for the yearly UN General Assembly meeting. His spokesman said the message of Iranian President to the world is, quote, peace, justice, confronting discrimination and domination, unilateralism and terrorism, and the West supporting terrorist groups, the main messages of the Iranian nation. True to his word, since he came to power, the Iranian President has fast-tracked Iran's relations with a host of nations, extending his hand of friendship and peace to leaders from Latin America to Africa to West Asia and to the East with Asian countries. Yet the U.S. has described this government as what it calls a rogue terrorist regime. Question is, has Iran done anything to fit that description? Does Iran go and confiscate the earnings of another nation, forcing the country that has those funds to hold it hostage? Or does Iran go and confiscate another country's oil tanker at sea, which in essence is a form of piracy? In this case, the U.S. reason, it was a sanctions enforcement operation. These types of sanction-driven acts, however, have come back to haunt the U.S., along with its allies, like its European partners. Countries have realized that it is not Iran that has rogue elements, but the U.S. The sanctions regime, the weaponization of the dollar, and its foreign policy agenda has left the U.S. isolated on the international stage. Organizations like BRICS and the SCO are testament to that. Countries are rejecting the U.S. approach and are aligning themselves with each other. So when the U.S. and Western media are accusing Iran of executing a hostage and ransom act, this line doesn't have many buyers, especially when it comes to the topic of prisoners. The country that has the most number of prisoners inside its jails cannot accuse another country like Iran of being rogue, never mind the illegal torture that takes place there. The U.S. also has no credibility when it supports a regime like Israel, which detains and jails people without charge or trial, almost on a daily basis. This is while Iran, inside the country, has pardoned thousands of prisoners on a yearly basis, based on Iran's leader discretion and approval. So the Western hostage and ransom narratives against Iran doesn't hold ground. Western pundits and so-called rights groups fail to mention Iranians languishing in U.S. prisons. They accuse Iran of falsifying charges against prisoners, like spying charges. Maybe the U.S. needs to be reminded how it was spying on Iran on a massive scale during the time it had an embassy in Iran. But the U.S. doesn't learn its lessons and continues down a path of failed maximum pressure campaign, a failure admitted by U.S. officials. This is while Iran will continue down its path of imprisoning anyone suspected of spying and acting against Iran's national security, as it has done countless number of times.
A Yemeni delegation accompanied by Omani mediators has returned home after 5 days of negotiations with Saudi officials in Riyadh. An official from Yemen's Ansarullah movement has described the talks as positive and serious to resolve the outstanding issues. Ali Al-Qahoum said the two sides would hold a new round of talks, but he did not give details. This is the first visit by Ansarullah representatives to Saudi Arabia since the onset of the war on Yemen in 2015. Meanwhile, the Saudi Foreign Ministry said the positive results of the negotiations could help reach a roadmap for peace. Before the talks in Riyadh, Ansarullah's top negotiator had said humanitarian issues would be the focus of negotiations. The Saudi-led war on Yemen has claimed tens of thousands of lives and destroyed much of the country's infrastructure. No end in sight to the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. At least six people have lost their lives in the latest Israeli attacks in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Health Ministry says four people were killed after the regime conducted a drone-assisted raid on the Jenin refugee camp. At least 30 Palestinians were also wounded there. In a separate raid, a young man succumbed to injuries after being shot by Israeli troops in the Arabat Jab camp in Jericho. Earlier, Israeli forces opened fire on protesters in the Gaza Strip, killing a 25-year-old man and injuring nearly a dozen others. The resistance movement Hamas has condemned the deadly attacks, warning that the retaliation would be strong. The movement also said the Israeli crimes would not weaken the will of the Palestinian nation. Well, the director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, Zafar Bangash, says Israel has resorted to drones and helicopters in its recent raids since resistance fighters have repelled its ground attacks.
This reflects a desperation on the part of the Zionists because the Palestinian resistance is growing, and in particular, they are targeting the Jenin refugee camp because that is where the resistance is strongest. There is the Jenin Brigade that has valiantly fought against the Zionists. And in fact, now what we witness is this escalation by the Zionists using drones and helicopter gunships as they did in early July. But they weren't able to move their ground troops as they used to do in the past into the refugee camp because they feared a very strong resistance from the Palestinians and that the Zionists might incur massive casualties. And of course, we see a similar situation along the Gaza Strip, where the Zionists continue to attack unarmed Palestinians, but the Zionists are unable to send their troops in because they know that there is going to be very strong resistance to their incursions. Similarly, inside Israel itself, there are deep divisions, and that is really terrifying the Zionists because they see the end of this illegitimate entity coming very soon.
5 days after the historic walkout by the U.S. auto workers, the union said it would announce more plans to join the strike on Friday if no progress was made in talks with the automakers. Concerns are high among auto officials that no deal will be reached before the Friday deadline. That is, the workers have urged the union to hold firm in demands for higher pay raise and elimination of the wage gap. The United Auto Workers Union has been negotiating the workers' demands regarding higher pay, better benefits, and job protection for its members. So far, the three automakers, Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler, have proposed 20% raises, only half of what the UAW has demanded. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
رو هدایت میکنه.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوة القرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Leader meets with people of Sistan, Baluchistan, and southern Khorasan provinces. On Monday, 11th of September 2023, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a gathering of people from Sistan Baluchistan province in southeastern Iran and southern Khorasan province in eastern Iran. The leader referred to the anti-Pahlavi regime struggles of the peoples of these provinces going back 60 years or more, and the fact that his own struggle against the Pahlavi regime started from this very same region. The leader added, "The peoples and top religious authorities of this region supported my struggle against the Pahlavi regime." He pointedly added, "The reason I refer to these past events is not so much to recount history, rather I want to rectify a false picture of this region of the country, which has been propagated by the enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran." He poignantly added, "Declaring the truth will shine light on public perception and public opinion in various regions of the country." In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. One of the main points of the leader's speech at this meeting was to warn the general public and officials to be vigilant and alert vis-à-vis major changes occurring in the world today. Referring to some historical events such as colonialism and imperialism, which reached its peak in the 18th century, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "When the colonialist movement started in Europe, for various reasons, countries should have been awake and alert. The leaders of these countries should have been vigilant, but this was not the case, and we all know what happened. Many countries in this region and beyond struggled against colonialism for two or three centuries, or even longer." In his remarks, the leader said, "Today a major change is occurring in the world. This has already happened, or it is about to happen. Today, the countries of this region must be aware and alert. We mustn't be caught sleeping. We mustn't fall into the same trap as we did in the colonialist era or following the First World War. We must be wide awake and vigilant." Explaining further, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "There are several signs of this major change. First and foremost among them is the weakening of the colonialist arrogant powers. This is a sign of the change which is happening. America's power is waning, and it will weaken further. The same is true about a number of European countries. Their power is also waning. Another sign of this change is the emergence of a new world or regional powers. New countries are emerging which are either world powers or regional superpowers, a sign of the new world order. Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "This is not just a slogan, this is reality. Even the Americans themselves admit it. The indices which used to point to America's supremacy in the world are all down and sliding even further. Among the most important of these indices was America's economy, which used to be very strong, but it is now waning. Another important point was America's ability to interfere in the domestic affairs of other countries and bring about regime change. But today, America is much more limited in what it can do." Commenting on America's ability to bring about regime change, the leader said, "If America wants to destroy a country, its options are much more limited today. If they dislike a government and want regime change, their only option is to start a multi-pronged, combined media-military-economic sanctions war against that country, an option which is very costly for the Americans. And in the end, there is no guarantee that this combined warfare will actually succeed. America has some of the most advanced and sophisticated military hardware and intelligence tools at its disposal. But in the past 10 years, how many of these multi-pronged combined war efforts have actually succeeded in bringing down a government and replacing it by a US-friendly regime? For over 10 years, the Americans tried this out in Syria, but in the end, they failed miserably. For over 20 years, they tried this strategy in Afghanistan, but in the end, their ignominious military withdrawal was a debacle for all to see. Thus, when we say America's power is waning, that is what we mean." Turning to Europe, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei pointedly said, "Europe's power is also waning. News from Africa confirms this. Governments backed by France and former French colonies in Africa are falling one by one, with popular uprisings, popular revolutions and military coup d'etats removing leaders who take their orders directly from Paris. Western powers are fading and becoming weaker every day." Turning to US machinations and plots in West Asia region, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "When we say the power of the enemies is waning, it does not mean, of course, the enemies cannot plot and scheme against us. They certainly can. They are busy plotting now, but we must remain vigilant. The Americans have plotted for the entire region, not just the Islamic Republic of Iran. They have plots and schemes for Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Afghanistan, and all the countries of the Persian Gulf, many of whom are America's traditional allies. Our information and intelligence tells us that the Americans have set up a crisis group to push their policies within this region further." Elaborating further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The mission of this group is to create crises and turmoil. Their job is to identify what causes a crisis and to agitate and cause a crisis. They have thought and studied carefully and have identified several weak points which can be agitated into a crisis. Within the Islamic Republic, they are concentrating on ethnic differences, on religious differences and the issue of women, agitating and causing crises. They want to deliver a hard blow to our dear nation through such crises. The leader added, they want to create a situation like that of Syria or Yemen in the Islamic Republic of Iran. But they cannot, of course. There is no doubt. We, all of us, should be vigilant and alert. We must know the ways of the enemies, and we must confront the enemy. In further remarks, the leader pointed to two fundamental issues of national unity and national security. The leader said, the enemies of the Islamic Republic are targeting our national security and our national unity. This is a fundamental issue. Where our national interests are at stake, we must put aside all our religious differences, political differences, and ethnic differences. We must unite together, because it is our national interests which are at stake. The leader emphasized, thank God, our nation is a vigilant nation and it is well awake. He said, I know very well and I see the signs that this nation is well awake and alert. The experience of the past 40 odd years confirmed this. And I say this genuinely, the Iranian nation is awake and is well aware of the plots of the enemies. In final remarks, the leader said, the enemy is seriously plotting against this country. And naturally, we must also be serious in our reply to the enemy.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Black and white.
Migration is part of human history. Perhaps we could not understand the humankind without migrations. However, we immediately think of the consequences of such a phenomenon. We think of incredible shipwrecks on the Mediterranean shores with children on board. We think of ships and boats sinking off in special areas. We think of refugees held captive, so it's a very shocking incident. For instance, the International Organization for Migration, dependent on the United Nations, reports that there were 261 million migrants in 2022. According to the International Labor Organization, there are 170 million migrant workers as of 2017, who make up 5% of the global workforce and generate 10% of the world's gross product.
Generan el 10% del producto bruto mundial.
The highly qualified workers go to the United States and Western Europe. 30% to 35% of these migrants choose Great Britain. 30% of doctors are foreigners in the United States. There is 50% of qualified foreign engineers in the U.S. That is a brain drain and also a form of exploitation of the people. We have already mentioned that there are different reasons for migration, and climate change is one of them. Some think that migration is a romantic phenomenon, but it is not like that at all. There are different motives behind migration. For instance, economic sanctions and criminal blockades to suffocate nations' economies and force them to accept a single standard of neoliberalism. On the other hand, there are military aggressions in Syria, Iraq, Western Sahara, and other places. We can mention the extermination and occupation of territories in Palestine as well. This is only one of many examples. These are terrible causes. As a consequence of migration, people wander the world and suffer all kinds of deprivation, racism, classism, without the right to social benefits. They are undocumented migrants. They were noticed during a certain period of time. In the past, the U.S. talked about a world without borders and cosmopolitanism. The U.S. also referred to neoliberalism in the global world. Neoliberalism was the backbone of such ideology. The neoliberals called people to move from one place to another. That's right. In this way, they could pay less to the workers and continue to maintain their power. I'm Eduardo Artes, and this is Black and White. Today I talk to Magali Avila. She is a Chilean-Peruvian journalist, human rights activist, and member of the Network of Migrant Journalists in Chile. You're very welcome to Black and White.
Magali,
how would you explain the causes behind migration?
Firstly, I thank you for inviting me to this program. Right now, millions of people are migrating from a place to another in the world. Migration is part of the demographic components, and it is not a phenomenon. It is like fertility and mortality. People are migrating for different causes. Some of them are migrating looking for a job, fleeing wars and fleeing natural disasters. Migration is on the rise in today's world. There are places that are already unlivable due to climate changes, and more people have to leave these areas. There are asylum seekers, people who migrate for health reasons, and a very worrying issue is the increasing number of unaccompanied migrant children and adolescents. Migration seems to be the only opportunity for the families. Migration is part of our lives, and it must be mentioned that they are people and not merchandise. It is a very important fact.
Y bueno, son personas, no son mercancías. Eso es importante.
Eso es así. Magali, hay una inmigración que es muy masiva.
Yes, that's right. It is obvious. There are different causes, such as the war in Libya, the bombardment and occupation of Syria, economic sanctions against certain countries to suffocate their economy and then integrate them into a determined model. These are strong reasons for numerous waves of migration. There are countless migrant boats that reach the Mediterranean. More than 40,000 migrants have lost their lives. It's very shocking to witness the deaths of newborn babies and pregnant women. There are climate change, financial crisis, and other issues as well. What do you think about these causes?
No hay duda que todo eso forma parte de, pero también tiene una causa económica. ¿Cómo lo ves tú?
Bueno, son no todas las personas migran.
All the migrants don't start their journey in favorable conditions. They go on boats, planes, or use land transportation. Unfortunately, some walk through the desert, swim across the seas, and not all of them survive. The real number of people who have died is not clear, because they only found the dead bodies. Asylum seekers who flee from these conflicts are actually going towards the same countries that ignited the conflicts. I mean, their countries of destination. They arrive in these countries and think that they are going to find a better future, but it doesn't happen. They aren't treated as human beings and are completely dehumanized. They endure many difficulties to reach their countries of destination. In case they arrive in those countries, they are criminalized, victimized, and dehumanized.
Criminalizado, discriminado, deshumanizado.
Ahí vamos, digamos, ¿cómo se trata?
How do states treat migrants? I mean, Western states such as the U.S., Spain, Italy, and Germany. Sometimes these countries promote migration. Germany opened its doors to Syrian labor at the time of the Syrian conflict, but started anti-Arab and anti-Islamic campaigns afterwards.
Anti-Arabe, anti-Islámica, increíble.
Bueno, es que la migración también es un negocio. Es un negocio para los países.
Migration is a kind of business. It is a business for countries and human traffickers. Migration is also a profitable opportunity for certain national economies. Migrants also send millions of dollars as remittances. There are racism in these countries. Migrants are not welcome in these countries. These nations expect scientists and entrepreneurs to arrive, but these migrants aren't like them at all. Therefore, there are racism, aporofobia, and hostile policies against poor migrants.
Cortar esos migrantes pobres.
Ya, Magali.
Well, Magali, let's have a break and then continue our talk on black and white.
En negro y blanco. Magali, bueno, estábamos analizando.
Well, Magali, we were analyzing the behavior and treatment of states toward migrants. Economic issues are also important in this case. We talked about different causes behind migration, but there are reasons that are related to their homeland, such as the super-exploitation of labor and bad economic, social, and political conditions. They arrive in a country that doesn't treat them well. You were talking about the same issue. There's also a certain editorial line in the press, in accordance with the ultra-right-wing nationalist discourse, which blames the migrants for all the social and economic problems of the destination country and the world. Migrants don't start the journey willingly. I have to mention that there are engineers and doctors who are allowed to migrate easily and have better jobs. We're talking about the mass migration.
Estamos hablando de la gran masa migrante.
Sí. Bueno, principalmente quienes migran son trabajadores y trabajadoras.
Those who migrate are mainly workers. They really want to improve the standard of living because they are impoverished in their home countries. They arrive in these countries, but the conditions are not prepared to receive them. These countries do not want to accept them and take advantage of these defenseless workers. In the first step, migrants face problems related to regularization, visas and documents. They need an official document that allows them to enjoy social rights and work with dignity. The businessmen and employers take advantage of irregular condition of migrant workers. They are hired, but are not allowed to make any claims. They can't enjoy full social rights. Finally, they work and have access to food and shelter. These migrants can't reach their goals. It is very interesting that you mentioned the media. The media reproduce ideologies. They finally transmit what the business leaders or governments ask them to do. Many governments need to distract attention from the problems that they are making in the societies. In this case, they blame the migrants for such problems instead of solving them. They claim that the shortage of jobs and healthcare for citizens is the result of the presence of migrants. They claim that migrant children have filled the schools. They also argued that migrants bring diseases to the country, such as COVID-19. The governments cannot manage a disease outbreak. They just blame the migrants for bringing multiple diseases. The destination countries don't implement certain policies to welcome migrants.
Una política de recepción tampoco para estas personas.
Migration has turned into a horrible business. I'm talking about coyotes, agencies and groupings that work and profit from human trafficking.
O la trata de personas.
Sí, bueno, claro, la migración es un negocio.
Migration is a kind of business for certain people. There is a transnational system that recruits people. These people sell all their properties to buy a single ticket, but this ticket isn't useful at all. They don't travel by plane. It just allows them to enter a place. There is an organization with allies that works on the borders. In this way, thousands of people cross the borders through clandestine crossings in different times. They pay the human traffickers. In their final destination, certain organizations swindle them because they ask them for documents that never arrive.
Estamos viendo en varios...
¿Y cómo se ve la corrupción?
What do you think about the corrupt states and official agencies in their home and destination countries?
De recepción final.
Sí, o sea, eso no sucedería.
This tragedy would not happen if there were no corruption and accomplices that are part of migrant smuggling system. These established agencies smuggle migrants across the borders. In human trafficking cases, a number of individuals are forced by others and taken to an unknown place. They exploit men, women, or children for the purposes of forced labor or commercial sexual exploitation. So these people aren't migrants. These people are actually victims of human trafficking. We shall mention the differences between migrants and the victims of human trafficking. There is another issue related to refugees. All refugees are migrants, but migrants are not all refugees.
Todos los refugiados son migrantes, pero no todos los migrantes son refugiados.
A ver, could you please explain this interesting issue a little bit more?
Claro, porque hay personas que están migrando.
Sure, there are people who are migrating right now. They are actually fleeing from certain type of persecution. There are international protection treaties for refugees. Those countries that have signed the refugee convention must host these people. So what is happening now? Firstly, these refugees don't know that they can apply for refugee status. Secondly, the police officers avoid giving them the refugee permits. In some countries, people have been waiting many years to get refugee permits. So they have a temporary transitory visa that must be renewed from time to time. Finally, this refugee status gives them certain guarantees, and their home countries cannot extradite them. So this refugee status protects their lives. Some states have forgotten that they signed this commitment to defend refugees' lives.
Ese compromiso de defender la vida de los refugiados y refugiadas.
Bueno, hay una parte, una arista, digamos.
We shall explain a certain point regarding migration. These people are actually encouraged to leave their home countries by a powerful propaganda. I remember a certain moment in Chile when the former president, Sebastián Piñera, offered preferential visas to Venezuelans. At that time, Venezuela was under blockades and economic sanctions, mainly by the U.S. and Western Europe. What do migrants think about this propaganda?
En el imaginario del migrante.
Bueno.
During his presidency, Piñera offered visas to Venezuelans, but imposed visa restrictions on Haitians and Dominicans. That was a racist policy. He offered visas to those Venezuelans who had earning power. When workers and vulnerable Venezuelans wanted to migrate to Chile, the borders were closed to them. Sebastian Piñera opened the gates to determined Venezuelans. The same thing happens in Europe. Europeans hate black people. These black people are vulnerable workers. There is anti-black racism in Europe. I believe that anti-black racism is expansive in the world.
A nivel mundial eso se está dando.
Perfecto. Bueno, el tema de la migración va a ser...
Perfect. Migration is a constant global issue that will continue to fill the pages of human history. We can't understand humankind without migration. But today we face waves of mass migration that have enormous profits for certain economic groups and countries. These destination countries normally blame migrants to justify internal problems. We are well aware of this issue because it happened during the Second World War. Nowadays we witness anti-Muslim racism in Europe. Migali, thank you very much for attending our program. See you later.
Participación y será hasta la próxima vez. Gracias.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
In the limelight.
The Gaza Strip's health ministry has issued a stern warning about the imminent collapse of dialysis services at hospitals due to the Zionist regime's brutal blockade of the Palestinian territory. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, the Palestinian Ministry of Health in the Gaza Strip has warned that the lives of kidney patients in the besieged Gaza Strip are in danger due to the lack of the necessary medical supplies needed for dialysis sessions. Dr. Ala Helles, the director of the pharmacy department at the Ministry of Health, appealed to all concerned authorities to assume the responsibilities to save the lives of kidney failure patients due to the acute shortage of the necessary medical supplies needed for dialysis sessions, which poses a threat to the lives of 1,100 kidney failure patients, including 38 children. Helles explained recently that the central warehouses are completely empty of medical consumptions needed for dialysis services, including blood filters and blood tubes. He added, the current supply will only be sufficient to provide services for 10 more days. Helles also explained that the Ministry of Health provides more than 13,000 dialysis sessions for patients with kidney failure in its hospitals every month, which requires providing more than 13,000 filters, 13,000 blood tubes, and 26,000 blood canals per month. Helles called on the relevant authorities to take urgent action to provide medical consumptions for the need of kidney failure patients, which means continuing service to them and preserving their lives. The Zionist regime has imposed a stifling siege on the Gaza Strip since 2007, limiting the supply of medicine, medical equipment, and other essentials. Patients are often forced to apply for treatment in the occupied West Bank, Al-Quds, or abroad in Egypt or further afield. However, access to such treatment is subject to the Zionist regime's approvals. According to Press TV, the Zionist regime has been imposing an all-out land, aerial and naval siege against Gaza since 2007, controlling Gazans' access to their most basic necessities through the blockade. Earlier in July, the ministry said 50% of cancer patients do not receive treatment due to the Zionist regime's blockade. Speaking in a press conference, the ministry's spokesman, Ashraf Al-Ghidra, warned of the dangerous consequences of the severe shortage of medicines needed for cancer patients, calling on the international community to move to save the lives of cancer patients and to provide the treatment and services that they deserve. A leading international humanitarian organization also said in September that the Zionist regime had deprived hundreds of Palestinian children of life-saving health care in the Gaza Strip during the first half of 2023. The UK-based Save the Children said nearly 400 children in Gaza, at least 2 children per day, were denied permits to travel to the West Bank and receive critical treatment in the first 6 months of the year. In the report entitled, "I Can't Run, Play or Get Treatment," the organization explained that nearly 100 children's applications to Israeli regime authorities were denied or left unanswered in the month of May alone during the Zionist regime's aggression against Gaza. During the same month, at least 7 children were among 33 Palestinians killed in the Zionist regime's attack on the Gaza Strip.